Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the highly anticipated finale. I guess highly anticipated by me. I don't know if anyone else is really anticipating this, but
I think everybody enjoys the season finale episodes. The end of season four is here.
Well, it's fun because we get to... I've been looking forward to this movie. Today is Eyes Wide Shut Day on the show. The last Kubrick film of the season. My cat's going absolutely nuts right now. He's very excited for Eyes Wide Shut.
Bonkers. Cat is just, loves that movie so much.
On top of that, it's ranking day. And it's the day where we talk about next season. So we got all kinds of fun stuff to cover today. I had a thought. You know that meme of the guy who is sweating and he has to pick between two buttons?
Yeah.
This movie would be like a conservative guy sweating between exposing the pedophilic elite and having to wear a mask indoors.
You know what's crazy though, man? Is so... With it being the season finale, we do our rankings. This is the hardest rankings that I've done so far in our podcast.
I have, I think I only... Let me pull this up and double check. There are some... I liked all of the movies that we covered this season. There were no losers. After the bonus movies, the one-offs that we'll cover on our next episode... We had maybe a stinker, one big stinker in particular.
Had a couple stinkers on the Thursday release.
But yes, this one was difficult because I genuinely truly think even the worst of these movies is, or I shouldn't even say that, the movies that I enjoyed the least here are still like 8 out of 10s for me, like 7.5, 8 out of 10s. So like this was a really, really good season. I feel like we lucked out.
Who would have thought the two dumb boys from Lomo Media would be wrapping up our Kubrick and Carpenter season already? It just seems like we started, man.
I can't believe that we were smart enough to
smart this season. We're so smart.
Got to analyze Kubrick and we should talk about Eyes. Talk about Eyes. Talk about Eyes.
I've said this before. This is
hang on. Your mic disconnected.
Oh, is it better now?
Yeah, it was just like we're talking about Eyes. Eyes.
We're here talking. All right. We should talk about Eyes Wide Shut because, as I've mentioned, this is in my top five favorite films. And we like to have fun here. We like to joke around a lot about you. You hate all the movies I pick, and then mercilessly tear them apart, and then tell me that you actually enjoyed them quite a bit. We're both familiar with Kubrick, as we've talked about throughout the season, but you had not seen this.
I have not seen this movie. No.
I just want to crack it wide open. I want to know wide shut. I want to know all of your thoughts on your first watch.
I'm not going to lie, and I mean this in the nicest way possible. I think you set the bar a little bit too high for me with this film. You hyped it up a lot. I don't think it lived up to your hype, but I did find it a very enjoyable film. I liked the story. I notably and historically on this podcast do not do well with movies over 2 hours. So we ran into that issue a little bit where I was like, this movie's getting a little long, but... The story kept me engaged in the world that they were building or the world that they had built. I was invested, man. I was invested in what was going on. I was invested in trying to learn more about these characters and, you know, and I felt good throughout the whole film. Do I think it's Kubrick's best film? Probably not in my eyes. You know, I think there's a lot of more successful ones. I think it's a very successful film. It's one of the best films that I've ever seen. I will say that, but Kubrick has a lot of films that are in my best films I've ever seen. It's Stanley Kubrick, man. It's like, it just, that level of expectation is just there always. And with this one being his last film and the way it went about, like him not really making it to the end of his film, I do think it, I kind of side with some people. It seems like it kind of like got wonky a little bit. You know what I mean? Like it kind of like, I wonder if it would have had a stronger finish if Kubrick wasn't, you know, dying.
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting because he handed it in like 6 days before he died, which is crazy. Think that he was working on this, you know, like for so long. It also holds the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest shoot of all
time. How long was it?
It's over like 430 days or something like that.
Wow.
So it was,
I can see crazy. It. There's a lot of big scenes. I can see it.
Yeah, crazy long shoot. I think that, and then the other thing too, I don't know how much of this he, people talk about this movie being unfinished, quote unquote, a lot of the time. And I don't know how much of that is like, I've heard some different takes on how finished it was exactly. Most recently, I was listening to another podcast about the movie, and what I heard was that a lot of the unfinished stuff was like the sound editing, and that some of the music and the sound mixing for things all went to his right-hand man, who there's actually a documentary about. It was on Netflix. I think it's still on Netflix. There's a documentary about Stanley Kubrick's assistant who was with him from at least Barry Lyndon, I thought maybe 2001, but he was just kind of there throughout his life and details a lot of what we know about Kubrick in terms of him being kind of a hard ass, but also talks a lot about his like artistic vision and how he got what he wanted in his films.
It's interesting that this is the last Kubrick film, and we did it on purpose. We did Kubrick's last film to end it on the season. I mean, we did this on purpose, but you see a lot of these elements, and we watched him grow as a director throughout this whole entire season. And you see little bits of all of his movies, all of his successes are in this film, which is one of the coolest things to see. You can pick out different parts of his successes in these previous films we talked about, and seeing this like world being built, you're like, oh, no way. Like, this is cool. And you just see, you can tell almost that it's the last like hurrah. Yeah, you know what I mean?
It feels like an amalgamation of like everything that we've seen before. You can pick out those Kubrick shots like a mile away.
Yep.
I absolutely adore the way this movie looks, like the lighting, the soft lights.
Oh, it's Christmas beautiful. Lights.
It's, there's this glow to it that's very cozy. Movie's got some, you know, take some weird unsettling turns, but it looks very comfortable to live in, kind of this world. And the fact that, even to like add to that, the fact that they built a set to be New York feels very alien at times, like not real. Like Tom Cruise is like, there's parts where he's like running around the streets of the set that they built for New York, and there's like no one around. It seems very strange, you know?
Yeah, it's got that After Hours vibe to it. I accidentally said Mean Streets in our chat when we were talking, but I meant After Hours. It's got
I was wondering for, I was
yeah,
like,
I accidentally said, yeah, I accidentally said Mean Streets and realized I meant After Hours. Not, it's nothing like Mean Streets at all. But
I was squinting. I'm like, maybe I can see it. I don't know.
You're like, how many beers did you have? Holy shit. But no, After Hours. That kind of like desolate New York City. You're like, is he alone? What's happening here?
Yeah, well, and so there is a lot of interpretation. Obviously, all these movies are open to interpretation with Kubrick and stuff, but similar to Full Metal Jacket, this one I like because I don't think that there's like too much going on that you need to decipher.
No, I think the big thing decipher is like how you feel about the movie, like the central, like,
definitely,
you know,
yeah,
was it a dream, did it happen?
Yeah, there's like, and that's, I think, like, you know, New York feeling the way it does in this movie, and the choice to build a set gives it this dream kind of feeling. There's a lot of things too, like Nick Nightingale, the piano player, looks an awful lot like Tom Cruise. And similarly, all of the women that Tom Cruise meets when he is out and about and kind of trying to have an affair, they all kind of look like his wife. Like, yep, they all kind of look like Nicole Kidman.
Yep. I was like, yep, exactly.
It's like he's projecting, you know, his wife onto these women. And it's just so, this movie, I think, is what I like about this movie is Kubrick tackled, you know, we think about these movies that he's done, and he's done movies about war, he's done movies about space, he's done a horror movie with The Shining, he's done all of these, like, crazy, you know, these crazy settings for movies, and then, like, for him to actually tackle just, like, two, I guess they're, like, well-off, but relatively normal people, just to have a movie about, like, marriage or whatever,
yeah,
feels like he almost doesn't know, like, what to do with himself or, like, how people actually interact together. Like, he has a little bit of trouble with that.
Yeah, he's like, let's show Nicole Kidman's butt one more time. can we get another butt shot? Roll the butt shot.
He apparently, I think Nicole Kidman, so I do have some unfortunate information. So this is not that bad. Nicole Kidman did agree to do full frontal for the movie, but she got final say for the footage. And I don't think that they ever even shot it. I think that they just got what they needed. Obviously, a lot of sex and nudity in this movie, and we'll kind of get into that and, like, what that means. But I also do think, so there is some kind of, we talked about on the Full Metal Jacket episode, Kubrick being a real asshole about Matthew Modine getting to see his kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I regret to inform you that the Eyes Wide Shut shoot was not much better. Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise were married at the time this movie came out. And so there was a lot of intense, I believe there was therapy sessions happening during filming. And in addition to that, what I had heard is that the flashback scenes but the dream sequence scenes where Tom Cruise keeps thinking about his wife hooking up with the naval officer, I heard that they shot 6 days of that. And that Kubrick told Kidman not to tell Tom Cruise. And so it feels very much like he was kind of like sowing some like distrust into their lives to try to make the movie feel very realistic.
I could 100% see Kubrick just doing that for 6 days just to get Cruise worked up, to get that feeling in him of, because what was it? Scorsese did the same thing when we were talking about, now I'm blanking, but it was the same thing where you like, it was a De Niro just trying to, I don't even remember, but he had to make him go crazy too by like staying up for hours on end and Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Yep. Making him stay up for hours on end to get that kind of crazy, no sleep environment. Right. You see it happening with Kubrick. At what point do you go, you know, oh man, these artists, these directors, they're so good, but it's like, how far do you take the art? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, how far do you go to get that perfect shot?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't wrestle with that a lot. And I do think Stanley Kubrick was an asshole based on what I've read. I also think he's a great filmmaker. And like I said, this is in like my top films. So like, I just have to kind of think, I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't like hearing that happened, but stories like that, anything with a story like that behind it is going to make audiences go, oh wow. Like they were really invested in the film. Like you could tell they're really upset with each other. It almost feels like it was sometimes like made to.
Yeah, but they divorced shortly after, though. Like, they divorced maybe, like, within, like, a year, maybe a little bit more after this film. Yep. So,
I love both of their performances. Nicole Kidman does some crazy shit in this movie. Some of her acting choices are insane. But, like, insane in the way that a person who is starting to kind of lose grip on marriage, or someone who, you know, like you're married for 9 years and you start to have this kind of like midlife crisis about, is this what I really want for the rest of my life kind of thing, you can kind of see a person like melting down in real time.
Yeah.
And I think her choices, especially that bedroom scene at the beginning, she's like has one of my favorite lines of the movie. I actually did think so. I was curious to get your take on this too. Watching it this time, I felt like the first half of it was actually almost like some kind of a comedy, like a dark comedy.
Do you mean the bedroom scene when they first have that argument, and Tom Cruise is just like, "What are you?" Like he's just going like
this pod is making you aggressive.
Yeah, that was probably one of the craziest. That whole scene was probably one of the best scenes I've ever seen acted to this day. Just suffering both of them. I thought they both did an outstanding job in that whole entire scene. A wild scene. A completely wild scene that doesn't make any sense at all. But
well, when we talk about the length of the movie, like I did notice this time that with a I think that this would apply to Kubrick films we've watched in the past too. It's like the movie is long, but it's not broken up into like 40 scenes or something. It is like broken up into maybe like a dozen. Like, I guess we have talked about this in terms of like Full Metal Jacket feeling like two halves or Clockwork Orange. But with this, it's just that there's never the story is not like this insanely long thing where it's like you're jumping from scene to scene to scene and there's 1,000 characters or anything. It is like 20 minute scenes, you know, like taking up full sections of the film. And it's like that is why it is built out to be so long. I mean, that bedroom scene has to be at least 15 minutes, you know, of just those two characters in the bedroom talking and
probably all of that. That really sets up the tone for the rest of the movie too. That bedroom scene really sets kind of the rest of the world that we're going to be experiencing throughout the rest of it.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman has to act high, and she also has to act like angry with her husband and offended, and then also clearly like she seems to be maybe like a little bit ashamed about this like thing that her husband didn't know about. And then when she reveals that she had a moment of, you know, doubt about their marriage and that she almost slept with this naval officer. And I love Tom Cruise's reaction. There are a few shots of his face when she's talking to him. And it is like his mind, it's like he just found out that women are horny too. And his head is just like blowing
the whole argument starts from him being like, well, men have more desires,
right?
And she's basically like, you want to know about desire, I'll tell you about desire, and almost to the point of excess to make him feel like a tiny man, and no pun on how tall Tom Cruise is in real life. But it just, I thought at times, you know, it was good for the movie, but I'm sitting there like, I think as an actual like relationship conversation or a marriage conversation, like she is trying to just humiliate him and break him down. And I'm like, at one point I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, what did he do to deserve this? But also too, we got transplanted in the middle of their marriage.
Right.
You know what
we
I mean?
Don't know, like,
we don't know what's happening before. It's
higher knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they both have these kind of, the idea is that, again, this couple's been married for 9 years. We see them at Ziegler's party. That's like kind of the opening scene, is that they go to this Christmas party. And she dances with the Hungarian man who is trying very hard to seduce her. And then she, at some point, sees Cruise walking around with these two women. And one of these women, he caught her umbrella or something at a photo shoot, and she recognized him. And so these women, they seem to want to have a threesome with Tom Cruise. And so it's kind of, it's like unrealistic that like everybody wants to fuck each other. But I think it's like kind of the point is that it's like a little over the top, because it's this idea that, you know, when you're married, there are opportunities everywhere to throw away everything you have for like a fleeting moment of, you know, pleasure. So they have this kind of distrust with each other already, because the argument does start with them kind of going back and forth about like, well, you were dancing with that guy. Well, I saw you with those two girls, and then not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but what I do like about this movie at the end, not that I would know because I'm clearly a virgin. Both of us are clearly virgins doing this podcast. But
speak for yourself.
this idea that sometimes in a relationship, like when intimacy is lacking or hasn't, you know, there hasn't been a lot of like physical romance in a long time, it can drive a person crazy. It could drive two people crazy to the point where they're like, you know, they're as insane as Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman in this movie. And so the last line of the movie, she says there's something that we need to do as soon as possible after he fesses up to everything he's seen and all this.
Yeah, this was a funny line.
And she says, we have to fuck. And I just think that that's such a funny and, like, accurate line for someone to say when, like, two people who clearly do care about each other and had probably just haven't been intimate in a long time and, like, feel like they're both losing their minds and they're out of sync with each other. And it's, like, sometimes it's as simple as this, like, one primal thing that everyone does that can, like, click two people back together, you know. I really like that at the end of this movie. I think that's cool. Did you notice the girls? I'm sorry.
I'm just picturing you just like showing that clip to Jess over and over again. You're like, this is my favorite part of the movie. I just, you know, like, what do you think about it? Do you like it too? Like, it's just, hang on, let's just watch it again.
She watched the first half of this and then she went to bed. I was only going to watch the first half because I needed to go to sleep for work the next day, and I got so sucked in that I finished the movie. She watched the first half, and during that bedroom scene, she was like, I'm on Tom Cruise's side. She was like, this seems very aggressive.
It was a lot. It was a lot.
It was. So the girls that Tom Cruise are with, he asks them where they're taking him, and they say, to the end of the rainbow, or where the rainbow ends. Did you see that the name of the costume shop was like
rainbows something?
Yeah. Look at us being experts, having the facts right in front of us, eyes wide shut.
I think it was like Rainbow Road or something like that, Rainbow Ridge. But can we talk about that whole situation between the owner and his daughter? One of the most interesting parts of this movie is when Cruz gets his tuxedo and mask for the ball or the cult, whatever you want to call it. And they go downstairs and the owner's daughter is in there with two older men. And they come out. And then after all of this happens, when Cruz is in this like world of shit and everybody's after him, he goes to return his tuxedo. And it almost for a second, it makes you think like that guy is somehow like that world there. Those two guys with the girl is almost kind of intertwined. It's involved something because now everything's fine. And the owner basically says, well, anything for a price. And if you need anything else, let me know. And like gestures towards, well, if you want to pay for my daughter at any time, go ahead. And it was such a sudden flip. But it's in this point of the movie where it's like the dream, like what's real, what's not real, is it even real? You can start to speculate a little bit. It was just an interesting like flip of the switch.
Yeah, it's probably the most unsettling part of the movie because he's not shy about Kubrick isn't shy about like making it clear that this is like a child. You know, like the guy even says something about like my, you know, she's just a child, like when he's first yelling at these guys. And to me, so my interpretation, I'd be curious to know like your thoughts and stuff, but my interpretation is just that like this shit is everywhere. Like it's not just the elites or whatever that are.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I
agree.
We're
not going into, you know, this is not a QAnon podcast, a Let's Go Brandon podcast. We're not, you know, this isn't a conspiracy thing. But
let's go after the movies.
It is this idea that like the movie obviously lampoons kind of the elite having these like anonymous sex parties and hiring prostitutes and people lower than them and all this kind of stuff. But I think the idea is that like it's, you know, you don't have to look hard to find illegal activity, unsavory behavior, trafficking,
no,
that kind of thing, you know.
No, it's almost that like once you see it or once you start looking for it, you're gonna find it everywhere. And that's what we see after Cruz goes and he's, you know, experiences that party for the first time. And then after that you start to see like the bad of everything. It's when we find out that Domino, the escort there that he almost has sex with, has HIV. You see the owner and his daughter. You start to see like the real before at face value, before this happens, everything looks fine. And then after the party, you start to really see how bad everything is in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we should talk about the party part too, because that's kind of the big thing with this movie is like when people think about this movie, they think about the masks and the cloaks and stuff. So
yeah, if anybody knows of any of those parties, you could reach out to me at JamesVLombardo9 over on Twitter. That's Jimmy on Twitter. Send me a direct message. You could also direct message at Lomo Media, as I have that account too. You can just let me know. I mean, I just want to know, just for, you know, investigative sake, if you know of these kinds of parties or anything. But anyways, yeah, let's get back to it.
You just want to keep an eye out to make sure that they're not happening anywhere near us.
I gotta make sure my neighborhood's safe, Aaron.
Right, exactly. Did you watch this on HBO Max?
No, I didn't. I bought it on YouTube.
Okay. I'm very curious then, and I have no idea if you remember or not. Were there people standing in front of the people having sex whenever they're at the party and there's like Tom Cruise is walking through rooms? Okay. So it's interesting. I have this on DVD somewhere, and I couldn't find it. So I was like, HBO Max.
I don't think so, because I remember reading about that, and it seemed like you would be able to tell when he was walking around. You could see like they were visibly up and down, riding motion, stuff like that. I could see that.
you up and down, riding motion. We're talking reverse cowgirl, doggy style.
There was zero missionary. God.
There's two versions of this, which is bizarre. The HBO Max one was the first time I've seen. A DVD copy does not have the digital stand-ins, but Warner Brothers did the theatrical cut. They did put in digital stand-ins, which is crazy because this is like 1996. I could tell. Like when I watched it, it wasn't like horrendous, but I was like, I don't think if I didn't know about it, I don't think I'd notice. But having seen it before watching it, I was like, I don't think Kubrick would block a shot like that where there's somebody standing in front of and then you just see like the person's head or something like that. You know, it seems very off to me.
Yeah, it's definitely I feel bad for Kubrick's like laying there in his grave and Warner Brothers like, yeah, we're just gonna digitally impose people on these scenes and you're like, this isn't Kubrick at all.
They're like, trash it. he's turning in his grave. This party scene is very interesting and cool. Some of the music they used, the chanting and stuff, was originally from the Baga Godvita. Did I say that correctly? I want to make sure.
Yeah, you're right.
Fuck up. They ended up changing that because they consider somebody at the studio thought it was offensive to use like a certain religious kind of chanting to single out this like weird satanic cabal or whatever is going on there. It is interesting. I don't know, like, how much do you buy or do you think that this is based on watching this movie post Me Too is like kind of strange. Like, and I'm wondering like how much, and post Epstein and things like that, and like Weinstein. So I'm like just kind of curious.
That whole like Studio 54.
Yeah.
Shit and stuff like that.
Do you think that this is like more than just a story out of Kubrick's mind? Like, do you think this is?
I think it's an over exaggerated version of what reality is. I know for a fact stuff like that exists.
Right.
But like, I don't know if it's that intense where people are dying. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe that is in Hollywood. Like when you talk about those elite not trying to get too out there and anything like that. But when you talk about the underground elite and stuff like that, as far as like Hollywood, we already know that weird shit, bad stuff was happening. We'd be naive to think that there isn't a similar thing that Kubrick pulled this from.
Right. No,
why he's dead. They killed him. They killed Kubrick.
You're not the first person to claim that. I don't think that they killed Kubrick over this movie, but I do think it wouldn't make sense for them to kill Kubrick over this movie, because it just would feed into people saying that they killed Kubrick. Like, why wouldn't they just, you know, the best defense of it would be to let it happen and be like, oh, like, we're not afraid of this movie coming out because we're not involved in anything like this. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
You know?
It's definitely interesting to think about.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe as our media company grows, we'll get to experience these things more.
Maybe. Who knows? Hey, you know, I might change my mind real quick about how I feel about these elite satanic elite parties.
Once again, I'm definitely willing to change my mind. That's Jimmy on Twitter.
It's interesting to me that he, a couple of things that are interesting to me. First of all, he fails to have an affair. He has like five opportunities to do what he set out to do. Not that it's justified. That's the other thing I was going to say too earlier, is like Nicole Kidman's like treating him like ass, but I also don't think that like what he gets into is justified just because she was being extremely aggressive. But it is funny that he like fails to have an affair every time something happens. There's like there's like three phone calls that interrupt his different experiences and stuff.
Well, it adds to the maybe this is in his head, though.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, I've had 1,000 dreams where you're about ready to do something, all of a sudden you either wake up or all of a sudden you're in like a different part of the world.
Well, that's it's so funny you say that, because that's the somebody said, again, I listened to a podcast about this previously, and that's what they mentioned, was that, you know, in sex dreams, a lot of times the dream ends right before you actually, you know, have sex with someone. And so, like, this idea that it keeps getting interrupted right before it happens is interesting. It's also interesting that it's, like, I think it escalates. And I think the child bride guy is kind of part of that. But it's, like, the first escort that he meets, Domino, it's just a kiss. He kisses her, and then that's, like, it. And it's, like, as the movie goes on, he's introduced to this party with a bunch of prostitutes that are maybe there against their will. I don't know if they're hired or not, but seems like not great circumstances. Then he sees that this guy who he rented his costume from is, like, pimping his daughter out. And it's like this increasingly this worldview of like to all of the shit that's happening around him just gets opened up further and further and further. As the movie goes.
One thing, and maybe you can, and maybe this makes sense to you, but so when Bill's at Ziegler's, he helps the prostitute, her name's Mandy, brings her back, and he goes and he says a line. Well, you know, if it's not today, it's tomorrow. Like this type of stuff will happen eventually. And then Ziegler uses that line against him at the end.
Yeah. Yep.
But what doesn't make sense to me is that the girl that tried to get Tom or Bill out of the party.
Yeah.
Like I was warning him. How did she know to get him out of there? And you could say, well, you know, the masks or not whatever, and I get that. So if we understand that, Ziegler tells Bill that she died, she was a junkie, and then goes into saying, oh, well, that was Mandy. But the girl in the moor, and maybe this is just me overthinking it, and it's just how they shot it, and it has no really meaning. The girl in the morgue looks nothing like the girl that warned him or Mandy, and the girl that warned him looked nothing like Mandy.
Yeah, so I heard that they are supposed to be the same person.
Oh, okay.
The actress that played Mandy was not available, and they had to get another actress to play her during the party scene, which may actually be ADR. Like that might be her voice with a different woman. I'm not sure about that. That's another thing too, where it's like Kubrick is so meticulous. Would he let that happen? Was it a decision that was not totally cleared or made until he passed, and then the studio decided that that's like what needed to be done? I really don't know, you know?
Well, it's interesting because it's like, at least for me, it was very obvious to know, and it was hard to, and I think that's one of the things, it was tough to figure that part out when you're piecing this movie together, because all three of them look like different people.
Yeah. Yeah. And that also could be the dream logic mm-hmm. that we talk about. It could be like a representation of the same person. You know, sometimes you have a dream and you like, there's someone in your dream that is someone you know in real life, but they don't look like that person, but you know it's them.
Yeah.
You know, I have no idea. I'm not trying to make excuses for it either. I do think it's a little confusing, for sure.
No, I'd agree.
So, do you think there's any chance that this was staged, like Ziegler said, or are you pretty much 100% sure that this happened, that Mandy was killed, that Nick Nightingale was, you know, assaulted, et cetera, et cetera?
I think I lean more towards that than I do to say, like, oh,
I do too.
Bill, it was just a fun time. It's because then he would have invited him back. I feel like, you know, like Ziegler would have been like, oh, hey, bud, you into that type of stuff? Why don't you come back? The password is blah, blah, blah. We'll see you on Thursday. You know, wear a different mask. But Ziegler was just so determined to change Bill's mind that I'm like, there's no way this wasn't, you know, they killed her. They did whatever they did to Nightingale. And if it wasn't for, you know, probably it makes me wonder what would have happened to Bill, though, if she didn't interrupt it, because I wonder if Ziegler would have stopped it, because Ziegler, you can assume, is either the guy who nods to him, or maybe, I know there's been some talk that maybe Ziegler was the guy in the red robe as well.
Interesting. I never thought about that. The only thing that I would wonder about that is, wouldn't he be able to pick out his voice? You know? And wouldn't we as the audience
maybe
be
not
able to pick out his voice?
Well, maybe we weren't supposed to, though.
Right.
Like all the other things, maybe it was, you know, maybe we weren't supposed to, maybe it's, but then you start talking, there's so many like different things that you can interpret with this movie, which is one of the things that makes it great.
So like we said earlier, like, this is a movie that I think doesn't have, there's a lot of different ways you can interpret it, but it's not like frustrating how sometimes when you see a movie, you have to like choose your interpretations as you watch it and like go down these different paths, and you know, you're like, but that doesn't make sense with this. Like, to me, this feels like not frustrating. And I like that its themes are pretty complex. I would actually say, even though this movie's remembered most for the occult stuff, I think the whole thing's great, but I actually really, my favorite scenes are the ones with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman interacting with each other, because I just think that they are very, even if the performances are kind of over the top, which is a part of the charm for me, I feel like some of the way that they just talk to each other and the whole movie, they're like kind of on and off. So I don't mean this to be a reflection on my own relationship, but having been with someone for like 9 years, I feel like some of the ways that they just like interact with each other and talk to each other, and they have these conversations about the dreams they have in the middle of the night, and all these different things feel very like realistic to me.
Yeah.
In terms of a couple. And so, you know, I don't condone Kubrick like torturing this couple IRL, but I also do think that it was a good move to have a couple that was together in real life.
I agree.
Play these leads. I think it brings something to the movie and the performance.
Well, for the sake of time, because you need to get going here in 15 minutes, we should probably do our rankings for the season and talk a little bit about those. I think we both enjoyed Eyes Wide Shut and move on to our rankings. But before we do that, I just want to give a shout out to our Patreon and members. You can join them at patreon.com/lomomedia. Dylan Painter, Jay Irvin, and Tyler Buckley, thank you guys so much for being patrons. If you'd like to join them, once again, that's patreon.com/lomomedia. Do you want to do our rankings, how we've been doing them?
I do. So would you like to start, or would you like me to start?
I could start. That's fine.
Give me your number 10, and I'll just, as you give me your ranking, 10 to 1, okay, I will tell you where that film falls on my list, and then we can both kind of just give a quick little summary statement.
Yeah, so my number 10 is going to be A Clockwork Orange.
It is also my number 10.
Not that it's a bad movie by any means. I just think it was the least enjoyable for me out of all of these movies. And it might fall victim to just seeing it so many times, and also victim of just, I can't get over the way they talk. Like, yeah. No more.
Yep.
No more for me on that.
I would say, too, this is like a textbook definition for me of a film that I think is great that I just don't necessarily enjoy watching. And I think I enjoy parts of it, but compared to a lot of the other films on this list,
as a whole, it's not as enjoyable.
This is something I'd have to be in the mood to put on. The other films, I might be able to just throw on Halloween or something like that. But all right.
Number 9, Dr. Strangelove, which is probably higher on your list.
So this is crazy because the way that we talked about this when we recorded the movie, or when we recorded the episode after watching the movie, I was like, oh, this is like really good, but you know, I don't know how it today, if it really feels super applicable and we rank these based on just enjoyment, like kind of how they sit with us over time.
Yep.
And so this comes in at number 4 for me.
Oh, wow. This, nice.
Really, really did it for me.
Yeah, I think as I sit here and think about the films we watched, I just don't really, it didn't, I think it sat less with me as we talk about the rest of these films as a whole.
Yeah.
What they were. But still, I mean, every single film on these lists was a great film. There wasn't a single one that at any point in time where I didn't think that it was successful. But just Dr. Strangelove just didn't sit there when I was doing these rankings, sitting back on it. So
yeah, that makes sense. Go ahead.
Coming in at number 8, Prince of Darkness.
I've got this one at number 6.
Okay, we're getting
pretty close.
We're getting there. Yeah, I think after these ones, we're definitely going to be far off from each other. But still a really good film. You know, it's crazy to think that, you know, two of my director's films ended up at the bottom list for me. But Prince of Darkness was really good. I just think a lot of the Carpenter films that we watched were more successful were more enjoyable for me. I mean, when we talk of we get there eventually, but talk about Christine, when you're putting that as kind of the bar for the film. So that's why Prince of Darkness falls a little bit lower for me.
It is, I think, his most style over substance movie that we covered. When I think about Prince of Darkness, I think about the effects and the green stuff and the dream sequence and the setting. I don't, as we said in the episode, very enjoyable movie, but I like this movie a lot. Out of the two black and white Kubrick films we watch, I feel two black and white Kubrick films.
Yeah, just The Killing and Dr. Strangelove.
Yes. I feel more like I would probably return to Dr. Strangelove, which is interesting because at the time that we did that episode, I think I would have had him flipped. But it is just a humble beginnings. It's a great movie.
It's a goofy movie. It's fun, not to be confused with the actual Goofy movie, but
Stanley Kubrick's A Goofy Movie.
Stay tuned because eventually this podcast will cover A Goofy Movie.
Yes, it will. All right. What do you got for number 6?
Number 6, I have Halloween.
I thought you were going to say Hulk Hogan and Santa with Muscles, and I was like, wait a minute there, bud.
No, that's not even close to, if I could put this at negative. No, I mean, you know, we start to get to the middle of the road. I really enjoyed the movie. Wasn't my favorite Carpenter movie, you know? That's at the end of the day, really, that's all I can say on that.
That's totally fair. It's a movie that I think stands the test of time for me, but I am also a big slasher fan. I'm a big Halloween fan. So it makes sense that I would have more of an attachment to this. I think kind of your normal horror fan that maybe isn't as attached to stuff like that or like movie history, it might feel a little dated. So I get that.
Coming in at number 5 is...
Did I say where I had Halloween? Halloween's my number 2.
Okay, nice. Coming in at number 5, The Thing.
For me, number 5, Christine. What am I doing? I'm fucking this whole thing up. Wait, what did you say? All right, number 5 for you is The Thing. Is that what you said?
Yep.
God damn it. It is number 3 for me.
Okay.
So, once again, close in ranking. A wonderful movie. Probably rivals Halloween. Those two probably could have been interchangeable for me. I just think this movie rocks. It just rules. I don't know what else to say about it. It's
a really good movie. Yeah.
It's, got this one setting thing going for it. The cast is amazing. The practical effects are gross. And the creature effects I still haven't really seen too much like it. So
I agree. I love the movie. I think this movie snuck up to my number 4, and I wasn't expecting it. But I just think in the order that we watch these films, because it sat with me a little bit longer, but coming in at number 4 is In the Mouth of Madness.
Wow. I'm pleasantly surprised to hear that. This one, like I said, when we watched the movie, this one, I loved the movie, but I did think that it was maybe easier to see some of the flaws that I didn't catch the first time I watched it. So this one for me is a number 7.
Okay.
But I again, all these movies are great.
Wait, so did you have Eyes Wide Shut at number 9?
No.
Oh, okay. So number 3, I have Eyes Wide Shut, which we just talked about.
It is my number 1.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. We already talked about it. No need to talk about it anymore. Right. But number 2 for me, very surprising, but sitting back and thinking of these movies, this is the only one that brings a smile to my face, is Christine. That movie, I just love it, dude. I love that movie.
It's as close to a feel-good movie as you're going to get out of this batch, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, like when a horror movie that, and sometimes this is a good thing, like if you want, a harrowing experience, you want the stakes to be really high. But for this movie, like sometimes it just feels nice to be able to throw on a horror movie that is like not too scary. It's just cool to watch. It's like the cast is good
and the effects
good.
Chef's the music, kiss. The music, effects. The effects, oh, yeah. All around.
It's a great time. It's like a sit down and have a few beers movie. You know. Yes. So that is my number 5.
Coming in at number 1. No surprise, ladies and gentlemen. Suit up,
Santa with muscles.
Shave your head. And go for a ride, because this is our podcast and there are many like it, but I picked Full Metal Jacket. Still stands a test of time for me and one of my favorite movies of all time. I love this movie from start to finish.
I think this is a great movie. This is my number 9. So
loser.
I'm sorry to say, but it is not for any particular reason other than I think I have less of a history with it than you do. I also think war movies aren't necessarily my thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, or at least I don't have like a lot of history with them. So I think this movie's great. Probably one of the best, if not the best.
Yeah, there wasn't a bad movie on this one. So like our lists aren't in order of like great. You know what I mean? For this season, I know in previous seasons we had some that were just dropped because the movie was just not good.
Yeah, for me, this is how likely I am to rewatch them.
Hollow Man.
yeah, for real. We're someday we're gonna do a bonus episode that's gonna be like our least favorite movies bracket, and we'll go through the worst movies we've watched for the show. I here's the difference that I'll say that should make you feel good is that when I said I think Clockwork Orange is great, but I don't know if I enjoy watching it. Full Metal Jacket is great, and I enjoyed watching it. So that is like where that switch happens.
So I think the biggest deviation from our list is just our attachment to some of these movies.
Absolutely.
From like our childhood. So that's cool.
And I'm glad. I feel another successful season in the books. We keep picking stuff. And I guess this kind of leads into our next season. Mm-hmm. We are consistently picking movies that we mostly like talking about. You know, every once in a while we get a stinker, but I think we pick good directors. We pick good movies from those directors. And that's why I thought maybe things could be a little bit different this season.
Season 5's about to take a dive, baby.
Do you have all 5 of your movies picked out?
I don't. I only have 3 of them picked out.
Okay. Well, we're gonna announce it anyways. And you're two surprise. We'll say that you have 2 surprise picks.
Yep.
So next season 5, after New Year. So not too long. When you get this, it'll be like probably not much of a break at all, really. But after the New Year, we will be returning with Lomo's Most Wanted. A season where James and I, Jimmy and I, both pick 3 of our 3 favorite films that we have not covered on the show before.
Not our 3, not like 1, 2, 3, but 3 of our like favorite.
Yeah. Three of our like top 10 films.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Top 15 that we have not covered on the show. As well, and this is going to be good, interesting, as well as our 2 most hated films. So we should have a pretty even balance of good shit and bad shit to ingest this season. I will give my films, you can give your 3, and then I'm assuming the ones you don't have picked out yet are the worst picks.
They are, yeah. The 2 surprise films will be the dumpster fires. I have a couple ideas, but we'll see.
We'll have to figure this out on air. We'll wrap up the episode. We'll figure this out and then we'll wrap it up. But in terms of order, do we want to save all of the bad movies for the end? Do we want to?
I think we got to sprinkle. I think we got to do a little sprinkle.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, so my movies, my films, my top 3 that we have not covered are Office Space, Aliens, and George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. My 2 most hated films that we will be covering. And actually, you know, I'm going to give you a choice. One of these films is going to be The Mist. The other one, I'm going to give you 2 Rob Zombie films you can choose from.
I love all of Rob Zombie's movies, I think.
You can choose, you can choose Halloween 2, which I would prefer to do, I think. Or if you'd like, we can do 31. Because when I was looking
at, I've never even heard of 31.
I had both of these movies rated the same.
Well, we can do Halloween 2 since that's what you want to do.
All right. We'll do Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. Those are my 2 most hated picks.
We got a lot of time with this podcast, bud. We'll have plenty of time to cover a lot of other shitty movies.
Well, let me tell you something real quick. You know what? I'll tell you off air. Don't even worry about it. Go ahead and give us your picks.
My 3, which are interesting because when we first thought about this, we thought it was going to be films that I didn't see that Aaron would pick, but I've seen most of those. I picked The Game with Michael Douglas. I picked Crank with Jason Statham. And I'm going to pick a film that I wish we covered when we did Scorsese, but one of my all-time films that rivals Goodfellas, Casino. With old De Niro himself.
Super excited. Haven't seen any of those. Casino's been on my list since we did the Scorsese season. And I've read so much about The Game, not any spoilers or anything, but I've just seen it constantly come up in lists of like top thrillers of all time.
Love it.
That I'm so excited to watch that. So,
and I'm really hoping, I'm crossing my fingers, man. Crank was one of my favorite. I haven't seen Crank in 10 years, but it was one of my favorite films when I was like a teenager. So I really hope it stands the test of time, man. Or that might do 2 good, 3 bad.
Starship Trooper episode. Well, so here's how I think we should do this. Theoretically, we have 6 good movies and 4 bad ones. You have yet to pick your bad ones. So... Mm-hmm. And I think that we should end the season on a high note. So we will start with a good film, and I will give you the opportunity. If you think that you're going to need a little bit of time to figure out what your most hated picks are, then we'll start with your best film, and then the week after will be my worst. Or if you think that you can have your most hated picked soon, And we'll start with my best film, and the second week will be your worst.
Okay. Let's start. I think we should start with the game. I think we should open up the season.
Let's do it.
Hot and heavy. For it.
We will be doing the game, and then we will be doing the week after, we will be doing The Mist. So, in terms of the movie, we'll be not pairing with the game, but that will be out the same week. We will do, we'll talk about it on the next episode. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we're going to review Loma Media's Open Window.
Yes. Yes, go watch Open Window. The best short YouTube short film that you'll see with the name Window in it this year.
So since this podcast is already a little bit long, I'm going to take this opportunity to just say we will be returning. Lomo Media's video content will be returning around February of next year. We have some big things planned, not big things, but we have some things planned to kind of stay consistent with content. And once around February hits, you should be expecting a video in your feed about every Friday moving forward. So
awesome. I look forward to being involved with the process, whether I am physically there or whether I'm giving you guys writing and whatnot. But I know we got some great things in the pipeline. I've got some sketch ideas that I'm excited to lay out. So thank you for listening to the podcast. In addition to that, we got all kinds of great stuff coming. So follow us on social media if you're not. If you want to support the podcast, as Jimmy said, we have a Patreon, tiers as low as $3 a month. You can get all kinds of bonus content, including behind-the-scenes videos, photos, sometimes early episodes, video episodes, things like that. If you can't afford it, which we understand, the holidays can be kind of tough on the wallet, you can tell a friend about the show, you can share it on social media, that always helps us get some exposure, and the best thing that you can do is go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. It'll really help people find the show. But regardless, thank you so much for listening. It's been a great season. I'm so glad that we did Carpenter and Kubrick, two genre greats. I'm already thinking about the season after this season in terms of directors, so we're not going anywhere.
We're probably going to hit our 100th episode in the first half of next year, too, which will be interesting. We got to figure out 100th. What we're going to do for that.
We'll have to pick something. My guess is that we'll probably watch Santa with Muscles again. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
If I had to guess now, but we'll see. Holiday special out now, and we hope you guys have a great holiday.
See everybody later.
See you, freaks.